This is Mental Selling. This is the sales podcast for people that are dedicated to making a difference in customers' lives and have a purpose beyond just a paycheck. I'm your host, Will Milano. Let's get right into the show. Being in sales comes with understanding that the job has a lot of ups and downs and rejection along the way. Those who can become most resilient are the ones that will rise above and experience the greatest success. Mary Browning is an experienced sales leader who's passionate about empowering others and believes she's only as good as the teams she leads. She's currently VP of sales with Starlifter, a company that believes it's time to get out of all those spreadsheets and back to business. And she's especially dedicated to helping more women to earn roles in sales management. Mary joins me today on Mental Selling, your favorite sales podcast. Mary, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thanks, Will. I'm very pleased to be here.
So we're going to get into a few things today that I think you bring particularly some great perspectives to. And as I mentioned at the outset, we're going to start by talking about managing the emotional roller coaster that is sales. And then eventually we'll talk about making the jump from individual contributor to sales leader. So let's start by discussing how you've approached the ups and downs of sales, both as a salesperson and then eventually as a sales leader.
Yeah, I think that's a great question to start with, Will. I'm a big believer just overall in expectation setting. And I think for individual salespeople, this understanding of the ups and downs in sales, like they've heard it, but it takes a little while to really feel what it's like to manage and perform through that. And so as I look at myself as a sales leader, being able to share sales actually doesn't exist without the ups and downs. And so if you've said yes to this profession and you're expecting that won't be there, it's going to be a long road. I take a lot of pride in just making sure that people just accept that and then they can move on and think about how do I manage to it. One step that I took as an individual seller is adjust my measure of success. That sounds easy. I think it's taken me years to really embrace it. But for me, when I show up to a sales conversation, it's, did I provide the best sales experience I could for this prospect? Did I discover to the best of my ability? Did I quantify pain and connect the dots to how we help really effectively? And then kind of let go of the outcome. And then I'm spending my mental energy on the things that I can control.
Yeah, I was just thinking as you were saying that, it's that focus on the things that you can control when you've done your best or not. And you don't look for that validation externally, huh?
Absolutely. I think it's key to also remember that others very naturally within an organization are going to look to the numbers. And so it's the discipline internally to say, I'm going to disconnect myself from whether or not they buy because I can't control that, and more around how I'm showing up and the experience that I'm giving and how I'm sharing knowledge.
Yeah. As I say, it's a sales process with the emphasis on process, right? In some industries more than others, there are long sales cycles. And like you said, success isn't just based on the final outcome and the final number, but it's everything that you're doing along the way.
100%. I'm big on process too. Anyone who's worked with me knows that. And I think the more we look at sales that way, the easier it is to control some of those ups and downs.
So when you think about your career, both early on and as you became more experienced and then as a sales leader, how have you dealt with rejection personally? Are there examples from your own career?
Yeah, absolutely. As an individual seller, I've won some really great deals that I'm proud of, and I've also lost some. And so as we think about practically taking that and putting it into, you know, an actual account or an actual opportunity, there's one actually that comes up. Literally, this happened last week. I was, working with a prospect that we've had go through the process, and we are vendor of choice, but can't make it happen this month. So, you know, oh man, this isn't going to hit my quota this month, that form of that. And what I try to do is really just shift my perspective on what can I learn here? Is there a way for me to help this prospect see the decision timeline in a different light? And what can I share back to my team to maybe help us get over an objection like this in the future? this scenario in particular had way more to do with what was going on internally with this company. Sales were down. They're in a little bit of a rebuild. And our product helps when organizations are kind of at a certain stage and they're just not quite there yet. But if I hadn't gone into it with a mode of curiosity, if I'd gone into it with a mode of pushing and trying to control their timeline, which I can't do, then I would have really felt like I failed. But we got additional information that's going to help us in the next step. And to me, saying, hey, Mary, remember, this is all you control in this situation.
Yeah. And sometimes rejection is not the customer saying no, but it's like you said, they have their own timeline. And most of the time in sales, it's not going to map exactly to what your ideal timeline might be. And you just have to be willing to pivot or, like you said, express more curiosity to understand where they are or maybe what their remaining concerns are. One of the people I interviewed months ago, he talked about viewing rejection as a gift because he said they're giving you the gift of helping you see what they are still unclear or uncertain about or misunderstanding, maybe that sort of thing. So they're giving you that information for you to act on.
I absolutely love that. Because where we don't do a good job as salespeople is when we don't pause and ask those questions and seek to understand what's really going on. If I don't know what objection is underneath the surface, then I definitely can't position my product, my service in a way that's going to help them. And that's the door to do that. It really is a gift. And when I ended that call, I said, did I just accept that and move on? If my founder comes and asks me what happened in that meeting and why they're stalling, if I can't answer that question, then yeah, I haven't done a great job. But if I can answer that question, then I did. And then I can release what happens next.
And ultimately, at the end of the day, it's about helping the customer achieve goals. And if that happens a month later than what you would like, you're still reaching that end game. The word resilience comes up a lot when we're talking about what it takes to succeed in sales. So I'm wondering what, from your perspective, resilience means and looks like.
I've finally figured out the answer to that question like this year. And resilience in sales is getting through a day maybe where you got a bit beat up and being able to learn what you need to show up the next day and be on the court. And be on the court with the same confidence, with the same mindset, with the same dialed in behavior as you did before that day. But the ability to do that enables an individual AE, a sales manager, the ability to really bring value. So I want to take a second and share maybe a kind of funny example of resilience, but an exercise that's really healthy to think about as a person. So as I mentioned, like resilience is learned over time. You have to learn how to stretch that muscle, right? Get that muscle like moving in that direction. One lesson I've learned is to pause and think about what do I need to do to be resilient in this job? That's probably different than somebody else, but what do I need? And the example that I was thinking of is I'm a Notre Dame football fan. And I tell you, I've had to be really resilient in terms of following that team. And I've had to think of how truly, again, I think this will make people chuckle, but truly, how do I get to the end of a season where we've lost and like move on with my day? My husband needs help with this too. I've thought about listening to that press conference afterwards, like really helps me get a feel for like where we messed up and maybe having one more beer after that game to move on. But truly thinking about like, how do I take being upset about my team losing into the sales call work? How do I find a way to still accept myself after I've lost a big deal? Thinking about that exercise and what you need and the discipline to go and do it is great. I'll say I had one of those days last week where I was really beat up and I had to intentionally talk about and think about how do I have empathy for myself in this situation, let go of the outcome and learn, and then you know, I needed to do a rowing session at home before going in the next day so I could show back up on the court.
And I think those sports analogies work really well because especially in the context of sales, like nobody wins all the time. Nobody succeeds all the time. And depending on the sport you're in, if you're a baseball hitter, if you're getting on base 30% of the time, hitting 300, you're doing really well. You know, if you're a basketball player and you're hitting 50, 55% of your shots, you're doing really well. And it's that understanding that, again, as part of the process, everything's not going to go your way.
100%. And it's the intentionality of how we're going to show up on the court the next day that makes, I think, the biggest difference.
Absolutely. It's how you bounce back, right? How you showed up with consistency. And that's consistency and resiliency hand in hand. So the most successful salespeople have the ability to adjust their viewpoint or their lens of how they see things and understand things from their customer's viewpoint, which is part of having empathy as a salesperson, right? So in that regard, I'd like to hear what you think buyers today crave most from their interactions and dealings in relationships with salespeople, maybe including some of what they're not getting enough of today.
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. And the challenge that sales individuals face in today's kind of modern selling era that we didn't in the past is just access to information. Buyers have a lot of it. It's rare that a buyer is going to show up to a conversation without doing a level of research and without already having maybe some perspective identified in terms of how they want to go about the evaluation process. And the most successful account executives that I've seen are ones that find a way to show the prospect or teach the prospect something that they didn't know, whether that's about how they're approaching the evaluation process, how they're thinking about taking this to their boss, how they're thinking about even just their challenge. Do they have full understanding of the problem at hand? And that in itself, you will stand out from all the other account executives who are selling a similar product or service. I actually had a conversation yesterday, actually, where I was the buyer versus the seller. And I was so impressed with how this individual showed up to the conversation because I was trying to wrap my head around early stage, what should I be doing in terms of lead generation and website traffic? And I actually had a conversation with one of their competitors previously. And, you know, I was like, hey, I've talked to this other company. They're sharing this approach. Is it similar to you? And like the account executive said, so that approach actually is different. That's better when you've already got your inbound flow moving and you're looking to just increase it by 3%. But with where you're at, we're at the first stages of that. There's some work we need to do prior to that. Whew. I mean, now I'm more valuable to my team in terms of evaluating. So focusing on just helping this person make a good decision for their business is craved today more than anything else. And with that, we didn't spend a lot of time on like how they were going to approach it, but it taught me something new that I didn't know.
Yeah. And also the ability to share trends and be forward-looking for your customers too, right? Helping them see on the horizon what's coming. It's that idea of, as someone has said to me, salespeople can't show up asking buyers what's keeping them up at night. They need to show up with two or three things that they know is keeping that person up at night and show that they understand the position that they're in from the outset.
Yes. And that is how you go from seller to partner. And when I look back at my success as an individual salesperson or in coaching others, when you make that switch and that prospect is willing to like open a car hood and really share more on their business, or they're looking to you in terms of how to do this, number one, sales is a lot more fun that way, right? And number two, that's a differentiator in itself.
Yeah. And they're not going to do that. They're not going to sort of open up the hood until they find you trustworthy and credible. I'd like to pivot a bit to your experience having become a sales leader yourself. It's such a massive move and shift for somebody to make. When you've gone into sales leadership roles yourself, how have you approached evaluating and building out your team, whether it's an existing one or you're creating one from scratch?
So there's a posture, there's an approach, a truth that I really try to pride myself on that has helped me make this transition more successful. And that comes from a place of no matter what role we're in, we're all in the business of servicing others. And when I've taken that spirit into a role change, into inheriting a team, into building a team from scratch, it has really helped me do that in a successful way. And so what I mean by that is when I was an account executive, like my prospect is my customer. And as a sales manager, my account executives are my customer. And that really sets the groundwork for how I lead. And so when I look at inheriting a team, I've done this 4 times now. And the best advice I actually got from somebody was to make sure you're starting that relationship on a good foot, just as you would as an account manager, just as you would as a AE for your customer. Doing that with your people is really important. The first conversation that I have with a team of current account executives, I want to try to level the playing field out a little bit and get to know them and help them get to know me. It's really hard to work in the trenches when you don't start with a good foundation. So some of the questions that I like to ask for team members that I'm acquiring is, what do they expect from me? What happens when you're stressed? What does that look like? What do you need when you're stressed? What are the goals for this year? How have you been doing in comparison to those? What do you think is working for the team right now and what isn't? How's the culture of the team? Like, just really trying to get a lay of the land and also saying to them, hey, when I'm stressed, I can get really mean. Be on the lookout for that. And I want you to tell me if you ever get into that situation, just as an example. So there's a foundation for me that if I can get to know that person at that level, it's a lot easier down the line to then have a conversation about performance or have a conversation about coaching or what I need to see from them.
And those example questions that you gave, those are such great coaching questions, right? Because as a sales leader, you've got leading, managing, and coaching, sort of the Venn diagram of your role. And there's managing, you know, the numbers and opportunities. But what you were talking about is coaching questions, I think, which really get to the heart of what makes the person tick and what drives them. And that's such an important part of that role. And then the other thing that you touched on that I thought was really important is that distinction of when you're a salesperson or AE, the buyer is your customer. But when you're in that leadership role, the team is your customer. And that's the biggest hurdle. Succeeding in that role is really embracing that reality.
Oh my gosh. Yes. It's difficult to transition from, I know how to go in and get this deal across the line, to I got to let my team do it. And I think that's another aspect of it. What helped me with that is giving myself just some freedom of my goal as a sales manager or sales leader is not necessarily to have all the answers and to give them, but to create an environment where someone can feel safe to go and try a new tactic or a new thing that we've been coaching on and learn from it. Which is, if you recall from earlier in our conversation, that's my measure of success.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about is around sales culture. But I think what you just shared is a good example of at least one of the things I think that's part of quote unquote sales culture, which is, again, as you just said, giving people the freedom to try new things and take risks, knowing that they may or may not succeed, but they have that confidence from you that they can stretch outside their comfort zones. How else would you define sort of a sales culture and why it's important and how in your role you can affect that?
So a few things come to mind. The first you mentioned, how do we create an environment, especially for younger sales folks or folks that are coming from SDR to AE, or even just who have been in sales for a long time, the comfort to try new things, to fail and learn is really important. The second is, as a sales manager, I set the pace for how we think about performance and holding each other accountable. Those two things, holding ourselves to a high bar of excellence, being able to call each other out when something maybe isn't in a good spot, is a really healthy part of a good sales culture. And I model that as a leader. So it's common for me, you know, one thing, I don't think there's any like straight linear path in terms of how folks get to a sales leadership role. But for me, 3 times I went from individual account executive to then leading the team. What made that easier is that I was in the work. I've been in a couple of situations where I've coached somebody to do something that I wouldn't necessarily do. So being able to show the team, hey, I'm going to go in and try this tactic myself and I'm going to record it and we're going to listen to it and we're going to come back and tell Mary what she needs to do better. Being able to show that I'm willing to go in and do the work, show examples of holding each other accountable to a high level of performance is important. the tactic that I've embraced that has helped me with that is identifying some account executives on my team that are maybe have been on the team a little bit longer or been in sales a little bit longer, and asking them to do some of that as well to help show examples of that to help drive the culture in the right direction. I want to be on a sales team that has a winning culture, and account executives deserve to be on that type of team as well. So that's just a couple different ways that I've instilled that within my groups.
One of the things that stands out about what you said is around the idea of what accountability is and is not. Accountability is not slapping somebody's wrist and pointing out what they did wrong. Accountability is helping them maintain clarity on what they're capable of and what their goals are and how you can help them achieve those. It's an important distinction of what accountability as part of a sales culture really means.
Yes, absolutely. Which is why I asked those questions early on too, because I can't have a team that's high performing, accountable, and fun without doing my job as a sales leader and understanding how they're showing up every day. And you're right. It's a, hey, we talked about this goal, but the last three sales conversations, you've missed this on price. What's going on there?
In sales, there are overlapping responsibilities, right? There's prospecting, finding brand new business, account management, expansion within existing customers, and then we've been talking about sales management. And those things can all be viewed as very distinct, but they're also very much interconnected, aren't they?
They are. And when I think about the ties that really connect those roles and enable them to play off of each other is, yeah, responsibilities are slightly different, but they're all centered around the same goal, which is to help customers execute a good buying process and make a good decision for them. And of course, to grow revenue for our companies. The other theme that kind of popped up for me as someone who has performed in all of those roles goes back to this concept of curiosity and how it really drives everything. And the reality that I'm going to answer a question differently once I know why you're asking the question. Those are one of the skills that when I think about my time leading sales development groups, that's a theme I want folks to embrace early on, because it's going to help them in a prospecting role. It's going to help them as an account executive, an account manager, a sales manager, an entrepreneur, right? So I think the more we can embrace this, the better off we are, the better we're going to reach our goals. I had a mentor say to me once, you know, Mary, your skill actually is that you refuse to exist in the gray. And that's served me very well as a sales professional, because the more clarity we all can have, the more we can influence each other in the right ways, no matter what role we're performing in.
Yeah. Keep coming back to this idea of curiosity as a core component of being an effective salesperson, which requires agility, because you've got to be able to pivot based on what that customer is saying. You can't prescribe before first diagnosing, which requires curiosity and asking good questions. And if you don't really know what the answer is going to be, you have to have that sort of agility to pivot based on what the customer is saying to you. Genuine curiosity is also something that customers can pick up on, right? They know if you're really asking things because you really want to understand, or if you're just asking a question just to get to the next question.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think this is really important for any professional that's building enablement programs for revenue teams or training programs. Today, buyers expect account executives, account managers to have a lot of knowledge. Knowledge about the marketplace, knowledge about the product, knowledge about competitors. And so when you're agile and disciplined to ask the questions, you got to learn how to pivot. And so my best advice for groups here is make sure your account executives know the answers to those questions and that they practice it. This goes back to sports, right? Like, what professional athlete goes into a game without practicing? So providing space for your teams to go and try and learn and fail and do it again is really important for success.
Yeah. And that's regardless of experience level too, right? Again, using the sports analogy, you can be somebody that's been a professional baseball, basketball, football player for 12, 13 years. Those people are still actively practicing and preparing over and over again. That's never done. You talked a bit about coaching before, and I wanted your perspective. So you know the types of coaching questions to ask, but why do you think it's so hard to coach if you've never done it before. There are always a lot of sales leaders that will nod their head that they need to be coaching their teams and that it's very important. But where does the hesitance or resistance to actually doing it come from?
For me, that always came down to time and being pulled in a lot of different directions. So the coaching side to things, it's you got to have intentionality to do it. Blocking times on your calendar to do coaching with your team. There's team coaching, there's individual coaching, and they both really matter. You know, what I found for myself is in my first stint of going from account executive to sales manager, the further I got into the sales manager role, the harder it was for me to recognize all the nuances that exist in sales conversations. And so I think back to a time where I had a high-performing account executive going into a very large executive presentation to do a demo. And I remember giving advice that just felt out of left field to my account executive. And what I realized is when you're not getting back into the nuances of sales situations, it's hard for your coaching to stick or to be right on. Now, don't hear me say you have to coach in the exact right way every time, because that's actually not it. But being in sales conversations and going through the exercise myself is hugely helpful for making sure that coaching is relevant. The best advice I ever received, it actually came many years ago at my first job. I was learning a new skill in sales, and my boss said to me, every time I hear you go into conversations, you're trying to do it how I would do it. And you're going to fail every time because it's not you. It's not you. When she gave me that freedom to think about how I would do it, it was just way more effective. And so I give that example because the art of coaching and doing it is like knowing what it's like to learn it yourself. I was going in and I was doing it the way she did it, which felt unnatural to me. I failed every time, but I experienced like the path, the steps, the failures, going back and getting it right. And that transition, that path, being able to share that experience with somebody and getting them to like get it makes a really big difference in terms of them being able to embrace the coaching or not.
Yeah, because you're giving them the freedom to do what's comfortable for them and to lean into their own strengths versus trying to, again, emulate what you did. And you might have been very successful. Yeah. You wouldn't be in the sales leader role if you weren't. But the salespeople on your team, like you said, they shouldn't feel like they have to mirror you.
It's going to feel totally wrong. You know, that was just an example, I think, of coaching and going through the process like that, the self-actualization process that I went through makes it a lot easier for that coaching to stick.
It goes back to some of the questions you asked before, some of those good coaching questions, which at the essence were helping to uncover what makes that person tick, what drives them, what's important to them from a goal standpoint, those things, so that you can then adapt your coaching to that person, that individual, accordingly. And part of that's on the salesperson, right? To make known, this is what works for me. They have a responsibility there.
Yeah, I think that's a great topic just when we talk about mental selling as a whole. It is the account executive's responsibility to think about what they need to be successful, what feels unnatural to them, and put their hand up and say, hey, I need some help like working through this.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, that's a really important component of it. So Mary, there's unfortunately still out in the world a short supply of women sales leaders out there. You know, we actually had an entire episode of this podcast on before, but I want your viewpoint. What do you see as the unique challenges and opportunities for empowering more women sales leaders and just women in sales, period?
Yeah, I love this topic. I've been passionate about sales and sales leadership for a long time, and I truly believe that our profession is better. Our customers are better. Our organizations are better when we've got representation from both genders really leading the charge. And when I think about my own journey and my career, when I first started out, I was that SDR that had this like bug in the back of my head just saying, Mary, you can be really good at sales and you will really enjoy it. The earning potential is massive. I waited to make the jump. I think part of that is just thinking back to how sales has changed, especially in the tech industry. It's been dominated by men for a long time. And when I think about like the challenges that exist at the center of that, one, I'll say I'm actually really proud of the times that I've been the only female sales leader in the room or the only female account executive in the room, because I felt like, oh, wow, I am really changing this trajectory of females in sales. But I think what's at the heart of one of the challenges here that we have to get right, and I'll say not everyone will agree with me on this, but I'm a working mom, so I can say it. There's a challenge for women who know that they want to start a family, women who have kids, who are thinking about, okay, I'm going to take a leave. I got to go on maternity leave, right? And when I get back, I have no confidence that I have a hefty enough pipeline to come back and keep my performance steady. And the fact of the matter is, we shouldn't expect that. You know, companies are trying to figure out, how do we structure a maternity leave policy for salespeople that works? Right? How do we get coverage of their pipeline? How do we make sure they're not coming back to a drought? How do we ease them back in? But we haven't figured it out. It's not good enough. And I get this. I'm talking to other female sales leaders and individual sellers. It can be very daunting to think about. And so I think that's a unique challenge that we need to try to figure out. I have crafted two maternity leave policies in two different companies for women on my team. I think we've gotten close, but we just haven't gotten it quite there. And if we can solve that and lower some of the pressure that it takes to have kids and also maintain a strong spot on a sales team, that would make a really big difference.
It's a really interesting perspective that is very valid and I hadn't thought of before, is that idea of, if you are going on a maternity leave for however many weeks or months, or if it's a year, who knows? That idea of, you can't expect the person to pick up exactly where they left off. And how do you adjust your policy, expectations, support for that person accordingly? It's an important thing that companies might have all the best of intentions, but that thought process is slipping through the cracks a lot. And like you said, it's just, nobody's really gotten it perfect yet. But if you're at least being intentional about it, right?
Yeah. And talking about it, how do we want to manage this pipeline? How do we make sure we're setting her up for success when she gets back? I've been on sales teams before, and this is, I think, a nod to just myself as a competitive person. When there's two of you and all other males, I tend to go, man, I hope I'm in a better ranking spot than her. And that just wasn't necessary. I've adjusted my kind of thought process around that since then. But I'll tell you, I would have been way more likely to jump into an account executive role or a sales leader role if I had other female sales leader talking about, hey, when I went on maternity leave, I did this. Or the way I manage just having kids and being a successful salesperson is this. I think the more that we can talk about that, the more confidence we can give to others that want to enter the profession. And again, like I said at the top, this profession, companies, customers, et cetera, we're better off when we've got a blend of both males and females helping us through it.
Yeah, and I think what you said at the outset when I asked this question, that representation matters. And that applies both internally for women that are on the sales team. They want to see people like them in those leadership roles because it makes them probably more likely to aspire to them, as well as from the customer's perspective, right? They want to see representation from sales teams that are coming into their organization that reflect the reality of who they are.
Yes, absolutely. Because we're just all going to bring different things to the table. And when I talked about what buyers are looking for to help guide me, help me see my blind spots, styles are different. And there's different ways that we're going to help customers get there. And if we're not embracing the difference, then we're holding ourselves back.
Thank you for listening. And I really hope you've enjoyed this episode of Mental Selling. Please make sure that you're subscribed. And as always, leave us a comment or a rating. Share it with your networks. You'll get more content like this on our website at integritysolutions.com. Until next time, I'm Will Milano with Integrity Solutions. Thanks very much again for being with us.